Hey there, veterans. This is Justin with a quick note before today's show. I've put together a few free ebooks that serve as a quantitative complement to these qualitative interviews. So if that's how your brain works, head over to the resources tab at beyondtheuniform.io and check them out. Hope that helps and enjoy the show. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Nasiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today's episode number 72 with Michael Bradley.
Just kind of baby step it, you know, don't think where do I need to be in 30 years. Think about, you know, what can I do in the next year or two to set myself up.
The top three reasons to listen to today's show are, number one, work-life balance. I don't think this is talked about enough, but Michael does a really good job of discussing how to factor this into your career path and decisions. Number two, career fair. Those of you who listened to episode number 55 with Ashley Snyder remember how she went directly from the Air Force to Google because she attended a veteran-organized career fair. Well, Michael is the one who runs that career fair, NUPOC. It's free. It helps a ton of vets. I'd go so far as to say that NUPOC is advantageous to veterans in a way that comes at Michael's expense. Check it out. It's really great, and I know all of you listening on active duty or who have recently transitioned would benefit from it. Number three, startups. Michael has started two different companies and has great advice on starting small. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find show notes for this episode with links to everything we discuss. You'll also find ebooks, a directory of services, and a free audiobook from audible.com, all of which are definitely worth checking out. So with that, let's dive in to my interview with fellow submariner Michael Bradley. Joining me today in Ebensburg, Pennsylvania, is Michael Bradley. Michael, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thanks, Justin. Thanks for having me.
So I wanted to give listeners a background. Michael is the president and owner of M3S Networking. It's a small business that focuses on dynamic problem solving, particularly with startups and small businesses. He started out at the Naval Academy, after which he served for 7 years as a submarine officer. After his transition from the Navy, he spent 2 years working on a spy satellite job with a National Reconnaissance Officer as an acquisition and project officer. He's also currently the chairman of the Navy Nuclear Power Officer Career Conference, a career fair helping veterans transition from the military or find new jobs. Those of you who have listened to episode number 55 with Ashley Snyder, you remember this is the organization that she credited with landing her job at Google directly out of the Air Force. So I would definitely check out episode 55 if you haven't already. Finally, and probably most importantly, he is a husband, he is a father of three boys, and he's also a credentialed baseball media member. Actually, Michael, to start off, I just am curious about the baseball media member. What is that like? What is that like?
I've made no money on it, but it's been greater than 10 years that I've been connected with the Pittsburgh Pirate media community, I guess. And it, just within the last three, I connected with an electronic magazine. That's how we want to be known as the Point of Pittsburgh. It's a Pittsburgh focused version of the electronic magazine Grantland. If you were familiar with Grantland, I found writing as a real nice kind of therapy, and I'm such a baseball dork. But baseball sabermetrics has gotten sexier after Moneyball, and Nate Silver. Nate Silver is a guy that came up through the baseball sabermetric community that went on to do some predictive analytics for the 2008 presidential election, and he started this blog called the 538 blog, and So it's kind of brought me some relaxation hobby, but also it's something I think eventually I could make money doing it if I ever would focus on just the writing of sabermetrics styled articles or analytics. All it's really got me so far is free entry into different sporting events. it hasn't really paid any bills, but it's nothing I have to do. I do it when I have the time. So
I love that. I mean, it's on the one hand, I always think that the best side money generators come out of passionate projects. But also, you know, I'm trying to write more and just realizing how incredibly excruciatingly difficult it is for me. And so it's awesome that you found a project that gets you to write, and it gets you to write about something that you're passionate about, because that definitely increases those skills.
No, I concur. I mean, and for you with doing these podcasts, I'm sure it probably helps you when you are kind of thinking on the fly, talking on the fly. The writing, I'm sure, helps you.
Well, the editing has definitely helped with my use of I still have like I still have like 1,000 of them, but I have probably 1,000 less than I did 3 months ago.
That's good. Yes.
So take us back. When did you decide to leave the Navy? How did you approach that decision?
As a submarine officer, I'm sure you appreciate it was during PNEO, which is for the non-submarine officers. It's our when you're leaving your junior officer tour, the tail end of it, you are trying to qualify to fill the role of the engineering officer on a submarine, which is probably the most difficult as far as credentials for your next sea tour. So you spend the last couple months of your junior officer tour as an O3 studying and taking this really intense exam. From what I've understood, it's like a shortened version like of a PhD thesis for my friends that are in academia. So while I was there, I just decided like I didn't love nuclear power that I thought you needed to continue on within the submarine community. And that's when I decided to leave the Navy after like all my, you know, thought process up until that point was career Navy, 20 years, even if I don't make 05, I'm going to stay in and get my 20 years. 'Cause that pension's just great. And the benefits, and, you know, I come from, you know, middle America, the blue collar area. So having just, taking like money out of the, you know, the worries for the rest of your life with that pension, that was going to be my path. But then I was like, I can't do this for another, you know, 15 years, because this isn't what I'm passionate about. And so I did go to a shore tour, and I did that in DC, and then that's kind of when I started just, what do I want to do with the rest of my life? And so I guess that the long answer is that the tail end of my junior officer tour is when I decided that I didn't want to be a career military officer.
And you continued on in the reserves, it looks like, for about 3 years after you separated. What was that like? And do you have any advice for vets thinking about whether or not to join the reserves?
Now, I will speak to I stayed in the IRR, which I would like to tell your listeners about that. If you want to talk, I'm sure Justin, you know, and I know some people that can speak to you about the drilling reserves. But the IRR, I stayed in there, and I probably should have done my homework a little more. But all you have to do to stay in the IRR is get 50 points a year, and there's different ways you can do that. A lot of the guys do it by and gals do it by Navy Knowledge Online courses and some stuff. But there's other ways to get points that you should look into. If you want to stay connected to the Navy, maybe you're not ready to go into the drilling reserves. Like, I'm always big on like visiting veterans' homes kind of giving it back, especially to like, there's not many World War II veterans left. But those guys that, you know, really – you know, they did some pretty amazing things. And now the Korean War veterans, the Vietnam veterans. So if you have the opportunity to go and do that stuff, you can get points for the IRR. I mean, I wouldn't say do it because you want to do it, but I never took credit for some of the stuff that I could have been getting my 50 points a year. I would go and do blue and gold officer things for the Naval Academy folks out there. Like, mentor high school kids that are thinking about becoming officer candidates. You know, those things, you can also get points for the IRR. So look into the other ways to gain, you know, points to have a quote, quote, good year, so that you can stay connected to the Navy. I love the Navy. I really enjoy my time. My best friends are all my military Navy folk friends. And so it was kind of hard giving that up. But at the time we were separating, and I think you as well, Justin, we were all getting those IAs to go over to Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah. And, yeah.
And I had two sons and another one on the way. And even though I could tell my wife that they're probably going to just put me in a desk job and, you know, in Iraq or something like that, there's no way she could have mentally handled me being, you know, in a war zone with two kids at home. And so that was probably the big thing, that and me just not loving nuclear power. So look into the IRR. I mean, it's kind of the gray area between drilling and not, or in just completely separating. And maybe in a couple of years you say, hey, you know what, I do want to, you know, be an active reservist and get that the rest of my 20 years doing that, and then have a nice little pension when you're 59.
And I'm wondering, you know, what are the highlights of your journey from getting out to today? Like, what would you want listeners to know about your career path and some of the things you've learned along the way?
Wow. Just kind of baby step it, you know. Don't think where do I need to be in 30 years? Think about, you know, what can I do in the next year or two to set myself up. I did some things. I guess I should step back. Well, first you have to look about what your situation is. I was married with two kids and one on the way. I had twins, so twin boys, and then I had a third boy eventually a year and a half later. So, but my wife had a pretty good job. So I was lucky. I kind of had a parachute that I didn't have to rush out into the workforce, and that's why I was able to do the entrepreneurial route because I had the help of my wife. So I think the big thing would be to look at your life situation and say, hey, do I need to get a job right now? Can I afford to go to school, go to a graduate school? Navy nukes have done tremendously well going to business school. You're one of them. And not that business school is something arbitrary. It's 2 years and it's a lot of money if you don't have the GI Bill to pay for it. But it's a nice way for people to kind of take some time and figure out what they want to do. So that's a route. But I would say spend a lot of time talking to people that have been in your shoes. Like I'll talk to you all day long about options, and I won't always push you towards the upper trajectory stuff if it doesn't fit your life, you know. If you're in a situation where you need to slow it down because of family, we'll try to figure some stuff out there.
I love that. And we had traded in emails just talking about work-life balance. And I think it's something that people don't talk about nearly enough of that. One of the reasons I started this podcast is to show that vets end up in any conceivable career. There's going to be a veteran who's done it. Like the options are limitless. And I think that oftentimes, especially the military has so many achievers who want to attain and want to really get the pinnacle of whatever they view as success. It's viewed in like a single dimension, which is what, like salary or maybe title and prominence. And that's just such a single facet of life. There's so much more involved. And I love what you're talking about of like, you can't just say like, hey, I'm talking to a veteran. It's so much more than that. It's like, hey, are you married? Do you have kids? Like, what's the life you want? How many hours do you want to work? And that lifestyle component. And so I'd love to hear more of your thoughts on work-life balance and what you've found works for you and what advice you'd give to people in figuring out what sort of balance they might want in their life.
How long do we have? No, just kidding. Correction. Do you have any children yet, Justin?
Not yet. You know, we actually just moved to Denver, and one of the from San Francisco, and one of the reasons for that was thinking about having kids and wanting to have a family. But all of my peers, I think that, you know, probably more have kids now than don't, and it's and you know, definitely from an outsider's perspective, it seems like it's a big lifestyle changer.
Well, no, it's, I mean, and not that, you know, having kids is the right, you know, vocation for everyone. But for those of you that, that's your intentions, it's the biggest game changer there is, you know. Being an engineer, I came up with my own algorithm for when you have kids. And I say that, before you have kids, you live your life from 30 to 70, but you don't realize it. But once you have kids, you get the whole 0 to 100. You get the, I mean, there are some days that like sick kids or like kids when, like I had a kid in the hospital pretty young age, and that was like a 3 on the scale of 0 to 100. But then the first time your kid says, "I love you, Dad," or, you know, something, you know, or does something really kind that you're just really proud of him, that's like a 99, you know. And so it's something that you have to. You have to make your career decisions with that in mind. If kids are in the playbook, you have to. I mean, but there's all kinds of nuances with there. I've learned now that my kids, my twins are 9, and that my youngest is 7. You look back and those years that the kids are just like babies, maybe like birth to, I don't know, year and a half. The person caring for them doesn't have to be dad and mom. You know, they just need a caring person to feed them, to hold them, to put them in the bed. You know, now that was me and my wife and grandparents, you know, since we were back close, you know, when needed. But the time that I would double down on parenting is once they start learning and start realizing, and when you want to build that character, like the stuff that they talk to us about the Naval Academy and whatever. I mean, I'm putting that into my kids now, you know, like, you know, being good stewards of the country, of the earth, you know, like looking out for those in need, and just the kind of stuff, like you can really, you know, get that into your kids at a young age. They can see you doing it when they're 3 and 4, and then you can tell them to do it when they're 5 and 6 and 7. And but then, like, if you parent like we were all parented, you know, when your kids are 5, they go off to school. You know, how much did I calculate? Approximately 1600 hours out of the 4500 waking hours of the year, your kids are gone. So a third of the waking hours, your kids are going to leave you. So there's a balance there. So that's when I doubled down with some of this entrepreneurial stuff. Once my kids hit school age, because that's when you will get a big chunk of your life back. I mean, there are people that homeschool, and God bless them. That wouldn't be the way I'd do it, because I'd probably strangle my kids, you know. So, I still help them with math and geography, and we talk about you know global issues and things like that. But I don't want to be the primary educator for my kids, at least at this current stage. So. But go ahead.
No, that's great. No, I really appreciate that perspective too. And I love that metaphor of just kind of the 30 to 70 before kids, and just kind of I imagine it's kind of the full spectrum then, realizing on highs and lows, but I imagine a lot more highs than lows. And, you know, switching gears a little bit, I would just love to learn more about the Nuclear Power Officer Career Conference, or NUPOC. And I love, you know, before we started recording, you described yourself as an event planner. And I imagine with that nuke background, you are probably really meticulous and just really good at it. But what would you want listeners to know about NUPOC and the work that you do there?
Our job fairs, our career fairs, we don't have a lot of them. We are currently doing one in Greater Washington, D.C., Arlington, Virginia, if you're familiar with the area, and if you're really familiar, near Reagan Airport. And then we do one in Pearl for all the submariners and the other military officers in Greater Pearl, Hickam area, and we do that one in January. And then we just did a really successful one up near the Bangor Bremerton base. And they are events. They are more than just tables and you know, your standard, you know, base job fair. We make them high end, because that's kind of the brand that I was going with, because I think a Navy nuke can hang, a Navy nuke officer can hang with anybody, you know, Ivy League grad or whatever. I'd put a Navy nuke officer up against any of them. So that we have these high end candidates, and then the companies, we bring some pretty high end companies. I always try to have, you know, a Google, a Palantir, you know, a Facebook, Blue Origin is a new one for those that are familiar with the space industry. And then the grad schools, you know, Harvard, Wharton, you know, we had Stanford Engineering at the one in Seattle. So it's kind of high-end candidates, high-end companies and schools. And then we try to pick some really nice venues so everyone kind of feels like this, you know, real kind of elitism, even though I'm like, I think of myself a pretty humble guy, but we try to do those. So the events are events. And as a guy like you that likes business, actually for me, renting out a restaurant is cheaper than doing a hotel conference room. So in a way I tried to do a lean startup and so renting out a restaurant and just spending a lot of money on really good food and really good beverages, was less expensive than renting out the Marriott, you know, conference room. So that's kind of how I stumbled upon these type of venues. But the way they work, I'm not a headhunter. I don't charge a commission to the companies. I charge a table fee when they come, normally like $2,000 or $3,000. They come and they get all of the candidate resumes 2 weeks ahead of time, so they can contact the candidates and whatever, maybe even have a phone interview. And then I just try to be a good friend to the candidates. I learn about them by just talking to them in emails back and forth. I kind of know what they want to do. I kind of know where they want to go geographically. But then I know the companies too, because I don't have 100 companies. I normally have about 20. So I know their locations. I know what type of businesses. So I'll say, hey, Justin, I know you kind of want to live in, you know, Denver. Well, there's this, national laboratory that's in Denver and would that be a fit? And this guy, Terry, who's an ex-Navy nuke, he's a great guy. Why don't you talk to him? So I kind of liaise in that way at the job fairs, and if there's not marriages, it's not on me, because I tried my best to introduce, you know, a lot of really good candidates with a lot of really good companies, it's something I can get my heart into, because that transition time, it's a very you're very insecure, you're very unsure about what you want to do. Sometimes I'm a cheerleader and telling these candidates, like, hey, look at your resume. You're an engineer from, you know, Georgia Tech. You know, you were on the submarine. You were a CRA. Like, I mean, come on, who wouldn't want you? You know, and other times I'm telling I think the companies get it now. At least the ones that come to my job fair are like, holy crap, these Navy nukes, they're amazing. Like, please give me 100 of them. But for the most part, it's a labor of love, and it's something where I can get my heart into. I'm never going to get rich doing it, because there's just not enough profit margin based on like events and advertising and things like that. But it's something I can definitely not feel dirty about, because A, they're really well run events, and I try really hard to do justice for the candidates and the companies. And if it doesn't work out, I feel like it's not for lack of effort.
I love it, man. I mean, there's so much about what you said that gets me excited. And, you know, one is the breadth of companies and the quality of companies that you're able to get there. I think for submariners and also just vets in general, but I'll just say for submarines in particular, it always frustrates me when I see a lot of people who go directly from the military into civilian nuclear power. And there's nothing wrong with civilian nuclear power. It's more the frustration that a lot of the people I know that do that, they didn't enjoy it in the Navy. You know, and so the thought that they're going to enjoy it on the other side, it's like, you know, there's probably something more aligned with their personal interests. And if that's what lights you up, if that's what, you know, fulfills your whatever you want out of a job, then great. But I get more frustrated by thinking like, oh, you're just kind of, they might be going there because they don't know what else is out there that they might like. And right. I really like that you, you know, I would even say, I think it's very admirable that you could probably make a lot of money if you were charging placement fees. And I also kind of get rubbed the wrong way with placement fees because that, in my view, if I want to make the most money from a placement fee, my goal is to get a vet into a job and I'm going to funnel them to where I can get them in the easiest, which I'm imagining is what is the lowest friction, what is the closest adjacent to the military. It's just funnel in there. It's all about volume. So it doesn't really matter to me if this is the ideal job for you. It's just, is this the most convenient job? And so by not taking that placement fee, I consider that a personal sacrifice that you're making that is helping vets, because then you're just there. You're just like a matchmaker. You're just, this is like online dating, and you're allowing them to find whoever is right for them, not whoever is going to make you a buck. And I just want to recognize you for that, because I think that, you know, as a project or as a business, you could, there are ways where you could be making a lot more money. And I'm just really admiring that you've chosen a path that is truly best for the vet, and that has come at a personal expense for you. But I think it's awesome because it's making a big difference, as we've seen with Ashley and I know with other vets as well. So I really appreciate that.
Well, no, I thank you're welcome. Or I don't know, you're welcome. But I don't know. I think it's a smart business model. It lets me have a little bit more credibility. I think it lets me go to bed at night where I don't have to worry that I pushed somebody into a job that you know they're going to hate. And so it kind of makes me feel better about what I'm doing. And if you can't feel good about what you're doing, then, you know, don't do it. I will kind of defend companies that use headhunters and headhunters in general, because there are companies that just have to use headhunters. Where I live not far from where Penn State is in kind of West Central Pennsylvania, my brother's company. It's a good company. They're just in the middle of nowhere, and they need need like real world talent, you know, and there's just not enough. They're too far removed from Pittsburgh and from some of the other areas to get, you know, some talent there. So they have to kind of reach out to these headhunters and pay them the, you know, for your listeners that don't know. So the standard is basically 25% of first year salary. So, you know, Justin and I coming out of the Navy, we're thinking probably like six figures, because that's what we're getting paid when we were, you know, submarine officers. Well, that's 25 grand on top of, you know, that first year salary that my brother's company has to pay. So he has to swallow hard and do that, but he needs to do that to get the talent to come. And so there are businesses, but that need to use headhunters. The companies that I try to seek out normally don't use headhunters, like Google and Palantir. They'll never pay for a headhunter, you know, like there's too much interest in those companies for them to ever to do that. So I don't want to say all headhunters are slimy, you know, because there's some that really are trying hard. But I just that business model didn't fit with what I wanted to do. I wanted to really be an advocate for the veterans, and there's still a way for me to do it and make a little bit of money on the side. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I think that's great that you point that out, and I think you bring a good perspective there, which is, you know, the responsibility of finding a job that's going to really be right for you, that is 100% the vets. You know, if someone finds, you know, someone brings you a job and it's not a good fit and they happen to have made money on it, that's not on them. That's on you for choosing that. And so I think you're right. And I know, you know, in the past, I've used recruiters to hire people. You need someone in a hurry. You don't have time to search. And so it's worth the money. And so I I don't want to give the impression that I'm against those recruiters. And I think they do serve a purpose. And I think it is the vet's responsibility. But I do think it's really great that there's no conflict. There's no possible conflict of interest in what you're doing. And one of the things I wanted to ask about is, you know, for people listening, who can attend this? I mean, is this only for submarine nukes? Is this, you know, or who listening could consider joining one of your events?
I will never turn a veteran away from an event. You know, if there's somebody that reaches out to me, I mean, Ashley, who you're talking to, Ashley was an Air Force veteran. You know, she's an engineering undergrad and I think MIT ops research master's, something, you know, pretty technical, that fit. But technically she wasn't a Navy nuke, but you know, she inquired of coming and I'm like, sure. The reason I kind of have it catered to Navy nukes is because every company there will take a Navy nuke officer or grad school. So the companies are chosen based on the Navy nuke officer. Like for example, a nuke enlisted, I always get a couple of nuke enlisted that'll email me and say, hey, I'm an electrician. I have, you know, I got my degree through, you know, it's called Thomas Edison University. They can get it through the Navy, in engineering technology. I'm separating in 6 months. Could I come to your job fair? Heck yes. You know, like there's a bunch of Facebook loves, and Google and all these people that have data centers. They love Navy nuke electricians and ETs. But for example, the enlisted would not be a good fit for Wharton, you know, and Wharton's coming there and paying me money to come. They're particularly looking for somebody with an undergraduate degree, you know, and an impressive undergraduate degree. So all of the companies and grad schools that come to these career fairs, they are going to accept a qualified Navy nuclear trained officer for them. Whereas they won't necessarily, you know, be looking for every, like there, I do have Navy, nuclear power companies come, not Navy nuclear power, like power generating companies come. And, they might be able to find a fit with Ashley, you know, Air Force officer that has no Navy nuclear experience. But it wouldn't be the best fit. So the job fairs are for Navy nuclear trained officers, but like I said, I'll never turn a veteran away. So if I'm in your town, right now, it's just, Pearl Harbor, Seattle and, Washington DC, either email me first or just register and please come.
And I'll put links in the show notes for the website, but that's nupocc.com, and you can find a lot of great information there, all the events, why you should go, more information. And Michael, one thing I was curious about is, you know, over these last 3 years of helping different veterans land jobs, I just imagine you've seen a lot of mistakes that vets make and common misconceptions they have about their job search or how to approach it. And I'm wondering if you could just go through just some advice you would have based on what you've seen so far.
No, definitely. Probably 95% of my experience has been with these, you know, Navy nuclear trained officers, mostly submarine officers, but some carrier nukes. So I'm a little bit jaded, but by that, because I've been focusing on one type of veteran. I think your audience is the broad ranging. So I'm trying to think of some things that I could tell. I'd say, first of all, do not underestimate the networking. You don't know how you're going to get your next job. Yeah, I mean, some of the things, and Justin, I'm sure you have some great stories about like just side conversations that became jobs or became interviews or became potential hires for your company. And the other thing is, don't discredit how you can help out your shipmate. You go to, you know, say I'm out in Pearl on January 5th. You already know that you're staying in the Navy for another 10 years. But if you come to this career fair and network, you might get an idea for your buddy who separates in a year, you know, and make a contact. And so never underestimate the different type of networking events in your area. Because I mean, there's a lot of us that I'm always looking for somebody to do different work for me, whether it's databasing or whatever. You just feel comfortable when you meet somebody in person and you shake their hand, you talk to them, and you can kind of judge their character, and you're like, it has a lot more resonance than just a resume, a PDF resume of somebody you've never met. So I would say get out there as much as you can. You know, take a trip. If you're a Service Academy graduate, the Service Academy Career Conference is wonderful. You know, I mean, in a way, they were kind of my model. Justin, I went and I met with them before I started doing this, and I said, hey, what you're doing is amazing. But, you know, of the submarine community, only about a third of us are Naval Academy grads. I would like to do something for the other two thirds. And I'll try to avoid where you guys are having yours, and I'll try to mix it up. Is that okay? Even though I didn't need to ask permission, but as a grad, I felt like I kind of had to ask permission, you know? And so we had that meeting. But for the Service Academy grads, go to those Service Academy career conferences. Even if you have a job, go, and I think it's like $30. And it forces you to update your resume, and you can go and make all kinds of contacts for not just for yourself, but for your spouse, for your kids, for whoever. So, that's, I guess I'm pushing networking a lot. That's probably my number one thing I would tell all veterans. And I think that's a pretty safe thing to tell that won't backfire, is continue to network as much as you can.
Yeah, 100% agree. And, there's so many dozens and dozens of stories for myself and for people I know who, it's the same, you know, if you think maybe, especially for those on active duty, you think of how people have met their spouse, you know, a lot of times it is the most random thing. You know, they're at a bar, they're at an event, they're at a friend's place. They have no actual intention of meeting the person they're going to marry. And then, you know, it's just serendipity. And I think that that's true of career opportunities as well. And so what I love about what you're saying, Michael, is like, what I'm hearing is like, you got to get the reps in, you know, you got to get those repetitions in. And resumes are one thing, but people are going to hire someone that they like. That likability factor is so key. And I think some things that help with that is practice. I mean, everything I ever did in the military was extremely awkward for the first 100 times I did it. Now, you know, the first board I had, the first time I was in charge, the first time I was, training someone. And then over time, it becomes second nature because you get those repetitions in. And what's great about any of these conferences is you're talking to lots of people. You know, you're like, hey, what's your background? You've got 20 seconds to tell someone. You know, it's going to be really awkward, but after a while, you start to refine it down and you're able to really filter out the most essential elements and get that out there. Yeah. The other component I'd say too is the two things that I've seen in these interviews and my own experience that have really helped with helping serendipity in networking is first to approach every conversation. I think this is a great life philosophy, but approach every conversation of like, what can I give? How can I help this person? And if you're looking for ways in which you can help someone else, I guarantee you it's going to come back to you. I guarantee you that when you're helping others, others start to help you. And not that that should be the intention or the motivation, but I've just seen that like, if you just approach every conversation of what can I do to help this person out? I think especially for vets, it just makes it easier, this whole concept of networking. It's less about this what could be perceived as slimy, and it's more about just doing good in the world. And then second, I'm a big believer in intention. I don't think that there's anything mystical about it, but I think if you're really clear on what you want, your subconscious is going to help you and you're going to find more ways to make that happen. And so I think it's really important to know the two or three, I call them, you know, a lot of people call them asks. What are your two or three asks? If someone were to stop you on the street and say, how can I help you right now? Have a very succinct way to say that. Like, hey, like, like, like for me right now, I literally met someone yesterday. It's like, hey, I'm looking for really great vets who have awesome stories, who are great role models that I can get on my show. Or, hey, I'm looking for someone who would sponsor this. And being able to have those two on the tip of your tongue so that when the tables are turned and someone asks or you want to put a plug, people want to help you, but they need to know how. And so have it really succinct. And those are two things that I think really help in networking and make something that seems like, especially for those on active duty, this foreign concept, it becomes much more approachable and much more understandable.
No, I think that's true. And what you were saying about what you're going to give to that person, I think that's intuitive to a lot of military folks. You know, when you show up at a command, you're just so anxious to help, but you don't know how to.
Yep.
You know, and you're just like, you know, let me do something. So I think that's a really good point. And just one thing I wanted to add about the career fairs or networking, like my career fairs, the companies always, to a letter, send an ex-Navy nuke to the career fair. And the service academy ones, I'm pretty sure most companies try to send either a Naval Academy or West Point grad to represent their company. So it's also kind of a safe place for those of you who are nervous to do this. You know, I know some of the ones that come to my job fairs. In 3 years ago, they were a junior officer on a submarine. You know, so they'll get you and they'll kind of walk you through and they'll tell you. And that's probably the best thing you could do. Like, throw it back on them and say, you know, how did you decide what to do? You know, and people love giving you their transition stories, which hence this podcast. That's something, if you're afraid to network, realize that we're all out there looking to help you guys, you know, and gals. And so just reach out to us because we'll give it back because somebody did the same thing to us. So
that's perfect. And I also just want to make sure because, you know, you have this entrepreneurial streak of having started NUPOC and you've started M3S.
Mike's three sons.
Yep. that's awesome. M3S. And I'm just, I know a lot of vets have the aspiration to start their own company, and I'm wondering what advice you'd give to them about starting something or working for themselves or creating side income.
Something that I would recommend doing is start small. So what I did is, as I was transitioning from the Navy, I had a job doing some design engineering that I didn't really love, but on the side, a couple buddies of mine and our spouses, we started a running club, and so we started this town running club. It's a pretty good running area where I live in Pennsylvania. And then from the running club, we did a race together, all of us. It's on Thanksgiving morning. It's a turkey trot. And, we ended up, I mean, it's cresting on 1,000 people now, for my town that only has 3,500 people. So it's a pretty nice, and it's a very well run. So, but a lot of that was baby stepping my way into like a real startup. I was able to use, you know, get really the Facebook nuances down. And it's funny, through my tenure of the last 8 years or whatever, Facebook has really changed how you used to be. You could see everybody that liked your business or your nonprofit or whatever. And you like promoted posts like there, that wasn't even a thing back then. Now it's a big thing. I mean, for most of you, I don't know if you don't have a small business or whatever, for us business people, Justin and I, if we want you to see our posts on Facebook, we have to pay money, even if you like us. So there's just nuances to how to use social media, how to use the internet, how to use Google Ads and PayPal. I used to hate PayPal when I was buying stuff off eBay. Now I love PayPal as a business owner. But all these things I learned through this little, you know, kind of mini startup with the running club and the race that we do. So that's conceivably a way for people to do entrepreneurial on a small scale, to get your feet wet, to get a feel for it. I mean, there's also the mentoring aspect. Reach out to somebody that has a little bit of entrepreneurial spirit and have them help you. But that's kind of where it started for me. And then I grew M3. M3S was going to be I was going to do small business consulting for businesses in my area, and then kind of try to move into Pittsburgh and do some consulting in there. And that this whole job fair thing was supposed to be a side thing. It's really become the main thing, and I haven't been able to do as much of the true life consulting that I wanted to do, but it's fine because I can really get my heart into the job fair more than I could do into just consulting in Pittsburgh. But that's kind of how I would recommend the veteran to do it. Now, back to my statement from, 20 minutes ago, I was able to do this because of my wife having the job where I could kind of baby step my way into it. A lot of people don't have that liberty, so you might need to look into other options. But you hear lots of great entrepreneurs that's their second job. They have a day job, and then they go home, have dinner, and instead of watching 3 hours of Netflix, they're hitting it hard. And that's where the startup comes, and then slowly the startup becomes the real job, and then you quit the old job, and then the startup is the full time job, and that's kind of another one you hear pretty often. But but if anybody on the side has entrepreneurial questions, I'm sure Justin you'll let them get in touch with me some way, but I could give recommendations and help where I can.
That's awesome. Well, I always like to end with just something more open-ended. And any final words of wisdom for listeners? Anything, it could be about personal life or professional life, but anything we haven't covered that you'd want them to know before we wrap up?
Knowing that a lot of your listeners are veterans or transitioning veterans, I'd say I guess the one thing we didn't talk about that I do want to let the veterans know is that consider where you live, especially in these next 5 or 10 years. Justin, you just moved from San Francisco to Denver. I'm not sure the reasons, but I know you're going to see a giant cost of living difference because I spent a lot of time in Denver and I know what Northern California is like right now. But when we transitioned, my wife and I, her job was in Washington, D.C., and we left Washington, D.C., pretty high cost of living area, and moved to real low cost of living Pennsylvania. But she kept her D.C. job, and that her taking her job from higher cost of living Washington, D.C., and moving it back to Pennsylvania, it was like getting a 40% to 50% pay increase for her, just by the cost of living difference. And so, something I'd like to emphasize to veterans is don't snooze on your on cost of living, and what a dollar is in one place and what a dollar is another place, especially when you're looking at careers and salaries and things like that. Or if you're able to do something like what Justin you're doing and what we already did, take money from one area and move it to an area with a lower cost of living. That's a big deal, and those kind of things can really help your standard of life. And the other thing I wouldn't snooze on is commute times, like going from DC to with pretty stinky commutes to Pennsylvania with zero commutes because we both work from home now. That's a game changer too, especially when kids are involved. So I mean, our mornings are so calm. I mean, my buddy and I, we go for a run in the morning at 6 o'clock. Our whole family has breakfast together at 7, a pretty relaxing 7 to 8 o'clock, and then I walk the kids to school at 8:20, and then I go to the coffee shop at 8:30 and work for a couple hours. And it's like this is not real life. That stuff doesn't happen anymore. And if you can set yourself up for some stuff like that just by living in an area with a lower cost of living, it can really help your quality of life.
I think that's so great. I mean, that's one of the things my wife has always advocated. We both run her own companies, and she's just talked about, you know, wanting to have that freedom. And that does mean making financial decisions that allow you to have that freedom and not becoming, you know, always living below your means and always making sure that you have the option to create your own destiny and not, you know, not have to take a job just to pay bills or support your really, really heavy lifestyle. And on the commuting piece, I'm sure people can Google this, but there was some stat I saw that was, I think it's anything above 20 minutes of commute time. Every 10 minutes of commute time, in order to equate the same level of happiness, it's something like 10 grand of salary increase. So if, you know, you add on 30 minutes of a commute, you better be making at least 30 grand or more just to offset that in terms of the research, what the research shows. So I love that thought of commuting and really trying to minimize that, because that can definitely put a damper on quality of life.
No, I concur.
Well, Michael, I appreciate your time and advice on this. I'll put links in the show notes to where you can find Michael and his site. But I appreciate the work you're doing for helping vets and for sharing some of that advice with us on the show.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate what you're doing, Justin. I'm sure that the over these, 50-some podcasts, there have been some veterans that life have been changed, and I appreciate what you do as well.
Oh, thank you, man. Well, I tell my wife this is my muse. I just love the interactions with people like you, man. It's always so energizing and gives me so much more creativity for everything I do. So it's definitely paying me back in that way for sure.
Great. That's awesome.
Thanks for listening. Three important notes before you go. First, Audible.com is offering a free audiobook for Beyond the Uniform listeners. I love Audible. I get 3 books a month, and it's a great way to use net, or no extra time, to polish off books while you run, drive, etc. If you go to beyonduniform.io/books, you'll not only find this offer, but you'll also find a list of every single book that has been recommended on this show. One in particular I'd recommend is The Hard Thing About Hard Things. This is a great story of determination and also a glimpse at what startups are really like. That's at beyonduniform.io/books. Second, there are so many great resources out there for veterans, it can be difficult to know all about them. That's why at beyonduniform.io/directory, you'll find a list of every single resource that's been mentioned on the show or that I've been able to find. You can also add your own if you find one I've missed. Lastly, I've put together several different free ebooks that provide data for veterans about their civilian career possibilities. This quantitative information serves as a great complement to the qualitative interviews I do each week. Go to beyonduniform.io, click on resources, and you'll be all set. Have a great week, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.